This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Wisconsin residents have more than $24 billion in student debt, according to a 2017 federal report. How is this impacting students and families, higher education programs, and communities in the Cooley region? Joining us in studio to talk about it are Geraldine Grandel, Financial Aid Manager for Western Technical College, Josh Bunnell, Scholarship Coordinator for University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, and Kevin Strangman, Executive Vice President of Administration for Ultra Federal Credit Union. Geraldine, I wonder if you know if Western Technical College keeps track of how often students are graduating with debt from your programs.
We don't keep track specifically from programs. We do every year have a cohort default rate that tells us over the last 3 years how well our students are making their payments accordingly. And we have to stay below 15% in order to continue to be eligible to receive financial aid. So we do all kinds of different things in order to try to get students to make sure that they pay their student loans back, making them aware of their education and how much they ended up spending. So we do have a lot of different tactics that we use in order to let students know.
I wonder if you have seen any changes in the amount of debt students are taking out, or just the amount of extra help that students need to be able to go to school over the years.
Yeah, actually we have, and because of the changes that we've seen, our college has actually made some changes in our what we consider our enrollment journey at Western. We have hired some additional coaches and have advisors that are working just on retention. Coaches are working on bringing students in and making sure that they get all of the information that they need. And we've had some really good ideas come from that for financial aid as well, and are sort of looking into the future and trying to mimic something like that, hoping to have some staff that are more dedicated to one-on-one conversations. We tend to, draw in information, email students, answer phone calls, answer questions, but we would like to become more intrusive so that we can provide better customer service and so that students are a little bit more aware of what they're doing and what they're borrowing.
Josh, I wonder kind of what these conversations have been like at UW-La Crosse and what trends you guys have been noticing as far as the amount of debt students are having to take on.
Well, the amount of debt students have had to take on has been somewhat stagnant, and even in the most recent years, it's gone down, not significantly. I would say probably around $60, the average graduating student loan debt that a student graduates with. So I think for UWL specifically, it's remaining somewhat still. And that's, I guess, not too surprising if you think of the tuition freezes that Wisconsin has been, keeping with through the last, 10 years just about. So the tuition freezes, I think, really help with keeping our debt somewhat stable. But we do offer a variety of other resources for students to help, educate them on better ways of managing their money. And that was the few resources that we have. We have the It Makes Sense office, which is a financial literacy office, and we have the Scholarship Resource Center, which is what I oversee. And then we have an awesome financial aid team, which we're doing innovative things to help students who come from all walks of life. So I think combining all of that, that all creates this initiative in this picture of UWL to really help students stay as low on the debt spectrum as possible.
You know, you mentioned that we have kind of recently seen maybe this steadying of how much debt students are having to take on, but I wonder maybe how like these debt levels compare to, 20 years ago or 30 years ago. I mean, comparing the amount of debt the average student has to take on, to previous years in education.
Yeah, of course, yeah. The cost of education has increased, so the amount of debt students have to take on, it's increasing. But if you look at the increase comparatively to other institutions that might not have the tuition freezes or might not have the lower state tuition costs, our debt average is staying relatively low. But yes, of course, comparatively to 10, 20, even 5 years ago, or maybe a little bit longer than that, the cost is increasing. And I think there are a number of reasons for that. If you just look at higher education in general, you want the biggest, best buildings and residence halls, and that all increases the overall cost. It's not just your degree anymore. It's everything plus the degree.
Kevin, I wonder what your perspective is on this issue, kind of from the lender side of things potentially. I mean, how is Ultra and other, you know, banks and credit unions talking about and seeing how student debt is kind of impacting other areas of people's financial, I guess, futures?
Yeah, we've definitely seen that on the lending side of things as well. So, you know, new graduates are coming to us with more debt than they have ever had before. A lot of it is student loan debt, and so a lot of it also is credit card debt that they need to help pay bills and things as they're getting through college. And so that really hampers their ability for what they can qualify for when it comes to buying their first car, certainly when it comes to buying their first home. And so as a result, they're spending less or potentially postponing those purchases because they just can't afford the monthly payments in addition to the student loan debt and credit card debt that they're already carrying. So what are we doing about it? I think a big part of that is education. So we have a financial literacy counselor on staff as well that is trying to get to the students while they're still students, hopefully, and trying to get to them before they have made some of the decisions that they're going to have to live with. But it's a slow road.
I definitely want to talk more about financial literacy later in the program, but I want to return to this idea of kind of the ripple effects of carrying more student debt. Because I think people could look at this issue and say, well, this is kind of an individual's problem of like the amount of debt they have to take on to go to school. But, you know, I wonder maybe what the argument might be that this is a community issue.
Sure. Well, I can give you a personal story. I graduated from UW-La Crosse quite a few years ago now, unfortunately. But as my kids now are getting of high school and college age, it's scary for me as a parent and where I think you're coming from in that it is a bigger issue than just an individual child situation. I wasn't able to rely on my parents to help put me through college, but the benefit that I had was that I had the drive and the ambition, but also the opportunity to work a lot. But by working a lot, I was able to pay for my education as I went. And I was fortunate enough to be able to graduate from UWL with no student loan debt. Given what school and education costs today, I don't think that's feasible for many kids at all to be able to work to pay for the education, even if they wanted to. And so if you don't have family resources, the only other alternative is to take out the student loan debt, which is, you know, what we're talking about.
Geralyn, I wonder if you've heard similar stories in your experience of working with students and families on these situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a lot of students who, we have a lot of, at Western Technical College, we are a technical school, we're one 2-year programs. We have a lot of adults that are returning, and they're single adults with children. Many of them, you know, they can't work full-time because they're trying to go to school, they're trying to work part-time, they're trying to manage their households, they're trying to find daycare. So they tend to need to borrow student loans in order to cover the living expenses. So that's what we notice quite often at Western for that reason. I mean, we're a very, I don't want to say cheap because we're definitely a great school, but it doesn't cost as much to go to Western. But the other expenses that students have, whether they go here or to Viterbo or UWL, you know, room and board is going to still cost money, and transportation and things like that. So somehow our students have to figure out a way to cover all of that.
That's Geralyn Grandel from Western Technical College here with us today to talk about why students are leaving higher education with more debt and how that's impacting local communities. She's joined by Kevin Strangman from Ultra Federal Credit Union and Josh Bunnell from UW-La Crosse. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Josh, I know that you also have your own experience, as Kevin was sharing his experience with, you know, going to school and student debt. And, you know, I wonder if you would mind sharing maybe how your experience has kind of influenced the way you help students now kind of navigate this.
Sure, yeah. I do. I have student loan debt. My wife has student loan debt. And our total is right around $120,000. That's both of us having master's degrees. My wife is a speech-language pathologist, and I have my master's in student affairs administration. It's interesting when you think of this debt, and I mentioned this when we first spoke, is I don't have as many concerns holding on to this debt because I know my plan, my long-term plan, with how I can pay it off and have some of it forgiven, and that's the same with my wife as well. But some students, they're taking on this debt without the plan of really anything. They're just taking it on, and they might not even have a career goal in mind. And that scares me. That personally scares me because I would hope that they would have a plan. But what I get to do now is help students navigate that, how to not take out as many loans, somewhat of the issue or some of the challenge that I came across going through my undergrad was not really understanding what loans were. So whenever I have the opportunity, I can explain to these students what the loans are and what the costs will be. And I don't have many opportunities to do that, but when I do, I take the time and I sit down and I walk through my experience with taking out loans, what I did, what my plan was, and try to help them think about a plan, think about their future, think about what that looks like. And I just hope that, you know, they take something from this conversation, because it's not really part of my job to have that conversation. As a grad student here at UWL, I worked for the It Makes Sense office, and I kind of had the role of being a financial counselor, but not really. So I help guide students to making the right financial decisions or the right financial decisions for their situation. But now as a scholarship coordinator, I get to help students find money through scholarships. And my hope is that that'll just help them reduce their overall student loan debt or the capacity to have to take out student loans.
Yeah, Geralyn, from your experience, do you feel like students, you know, are really understanding kind of the impact taking on this debt is going to have on their future?
I really struggle with that because there's so many things coming at them. They need to figure out how to make ends meet. You know, we don't have the choice, according to federal regulation, to not offer student loans to students. They do all through entrance counseling. When they borrow a student loan for the first time, they may not end up paying their student loans back until 5 or 6 years later, whenever they're done. And do they really remember what they learned when they went through entrance counseling? So I think, you know, at the time when they're looking at what we're offering them, whether it be grants and loans or just loans, they just know that they have to figure out how to make ends meet, and they worry about the ramifications later.
Yeah, Kevin, I wonder what your thoughts are. You mentioned that Alter is offering, you know, financial literacy, and I wonder if what your thoughts are on if we're educating students early enough in the process, even looking to, you know, before college or before making decisions about, you know, post-secondary education, about, you know, finances and you know, planning for their future.
Yeah, I think that it is more than just a one-and-done effort. It is certainly the educational part of it has to be continuous and ongoing. And helping them develop a plan really before they get to college. It's not too late once you get to college, but it makes it a lot tougher to retain the benefits that you've learned. So I think getting to even middle schoolers and teaching them some of the basic finances and what a budget is, how it works, even with small dollar amounts, teaching them the value of saving is really important. That gets ramped up a little bit more in high school, certainly. But all of those opportunities to try and get in front of kids and talk about just how you manage money and finances in general can help them put together a plan. That's really, quite frankly, the reason we have a couple of offices in local high schools to try and reach more kids and get in front of them with more opportunities to be able to at least get them grounded in what it means to put together a budget.
How long has Altra had that partnership with schools, and maybe can you share which schools?
Sure. So we're in Holman High School and Central High School, LaCrosse Central High School. And goodness, we've been there over 10 years for sure. It's probably closer to 15 years. And so it's just a great opportunity to get in the classroom and work with some of the teachers there on staff. We love to go to the colleges and just really talk about it whenever we can. And really just trying to ramp up the whole concept of financial literacy and what it means and how it can help kids.
Yeah, Geraldine, can you share more about what financial literacy, you mentioned entrance counseling as an option, but what financial literacy looks like at Western Technical College?
Yeah, we actually have a financial literacy department, and we are constantly looking for programs that we can offer. We will go into classrooms and speak to classes. We offer that out to our instructors and say, hey, come and let us know what you want us to teach, you know, the students. Do you want us to teach about student loan debt? Do you want to talk about credit card debt? We are constantly tabling in our union market. So we're sitting at a table and we're there to help students navigate their financial aid portal. Answer questions about entrance counseling, about repayment, whatever they might have questions on. So we're trying to just be a little bit more visual. So we're not just hiding in our offices. We're out there and we're trying to get, you know, into classrooms and where the students are at.
Speaking of visual, I wish people could see through the radio at Josh's amazing money suit that looks like it's made out of money. Josh, can you share why you wear a suit that looks like $100 bills?
Sure. Yeah, it is the full suit. And I really wear it to break down barriers. So what I use it as is a way to engage students. A lot of students are not very welcome to financial, any kind of conversation. So when I wear this suit, it kind of creates light of the situation, light of the interaction and conversation. So much like Geraldine, you were talking about getting out in front of students. When I worked for the It Makes Sense office, that's when I first put on the money suit, because I noticed it was very difficult to have these conversations, but I would do a lot of tabling and I would get out in front of the students, and having these conversations became much easier once I put the money suit on. The students would approach me a little bit more easily. They were laughing, kind of pointing at the money suit, and it just continued with my employment here at UWL. And now I speak with parents and I get up in front of them and talk with a suit on. They come to me afterwards, and usually the dads make some kind of money joke, like, oh, you look like $1 million, yeah, or something like that, or could I just have a sleeve for tuition? It's just, like, the jokes are endless. But it does, it breaks those walls down, and it helps create a little bit easier flow to the conversation.
You've mentioned the It Makes Sense programs a few times. I wonder if you could just kind of share what that initiative is here at UWL.
Yeah, sure. It's a financial literacy program, so much like the Western Tech. And the whole purpose of it is to help students manage their money. We know that students are having difficulties with everything money-related, financial-related. And it is about getting in front of them and helping educate them on how to manage what they have and what their savings, or if they're not saving, if they're using a credit card. But not only that, it's getting out in front of the college students, it's getting out in front of high schools and middle schools. Even though I'm not part of the It Makes Sense program anymore, I did just speak with a middle school field trip class today that came to UWL. So it's really about getting in front of them and having this conversation. So the It Makes Sense office, they put on, I would say, 20 or so programs every single semester, and they bring in pizza, soda, they incentivize with a $50 scholarship to their events, and they have topics ranging from how to use a credit card properly or the dangers of credit cards to how to buy a car, how to rent smart. There's a wide range of different events that they put on, and really they look for events that are interesting to students, what really students want to learn about. And that can be ever-changing from semester to semester, but there are a few constants that are always helpful for students.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that a lot of these conversations are not just around tuition fees and books fees, you know, things that you might associate with going to school, but it's really about, you know, rent. It's about, you know, the other food. It's about the other expenses that students are having to kind of cover.
Yes, and it's I have a funny story with that. So when I was a grad student for the It Makes Sense office, I would have one-on-one consultations with students, and one student that rings a bell just with this story is she came in wanting to look at her budget, figure out how she could better manage it or actually just create a budget. And we decided to go through everything that she was spending. And it was primarily cash, but what we were looking at was how much she was spending on going out. So going out for a couple drinks or going to just grab some lunch and supper. And she was spending $200 to $300 a month. And this is a college student's budget. So $200 to $300 is quite a bit. And I think it was right around 60% of her entire budget was going to going out, when that should be right around, what, like 10% of the budget, if I remember correctly. So we had to look at how we could get that down. What I found is, you know, it's very relatable to smoking. If you try to quit smoking cold turkey, are you very successful with it? Not so much. No, there's a lot of relapse. So I couldn't just say you have to spend 50% less on going out. That wouldn't work, and the student wouldn't be so successful. So I said, we need to give you a money patch. So it's like a little Band-Aid with a money sign on it, and it's slowly weaning you off spending the $300. So it's like, okay, we'll take $25 away the first month. We'll take $50 away the third month, and we slowly bring you down to that 10% mark. So it was quite an interesting conversation to have with that student, and relating it to smoking, I don't know if it was the best, but it worked. I mean, it worked. And you think about spending as kind of an addiction. You always want to go out and do the most fun stuff. And how can you wean yourself off of that?
Yeah, Geraldine, you mentioned earlier that, you know, this a lot of the students that are coming to you are using loans to cover, you know, living and family needs and stuff and those sorts of things. And I just wonder, yeah, how that maybe influences the way we think about student debt.
Well, like I said, I think it's a lot of pressure because they obviously want to be in school. They want to get an education. They want to get out in the workforce. They're looking for whatever they can find to help them to get through that. But I think, like I said earlier, looking at the end result, like, you know, how much have I borrowed along the way and what does that mean as far as how much I'm going to have to pay every month and will that be able to fit into my budget according to the job that I get and, you know, will I get a job in my program, you know, or in the field that I'm looking for, you know, and will I make enough to cover everything? And, you know, the federal government, they do, with the direct loans, there are a lot of great programs out there. Like if students are having issues with paying their loans back, if they make sure they make in contact with their servicer, there are different programs they can get on. If they can't afford the payment that they're set up to be paying, if they meet criteria, they may have to be able to pay a smaller amount or nothing at all while they're trying to kind of get to the point in their career in order to be making a certain amount that they can now afford to pay a little bit more. And then that will, you know, help them to pay off their debt eventually. But I think, you know, it's just really, it's tough. It's kind of like what Josh said earlier, you know, the college expense has gone up considerably. And when you look at the amount of like free financial aid, free money that students are getting, that is not kept up. So students are kind of forced to look at student loans, whether it be the direct loan. Some of them don't even get enough in the direct loan program. They have to borrow into private loans, and private loans need cosigners, and they have higher interest rates, all of those things. But I don't think that they're just so focused on wanting to get through their degree, they're not worrying about what happens later.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit more about how financial aid offerings, grants, you know, have not really kept up with the cost of mm-hmm. education?
Yeah, when as I've been doing this for 27 years, and I've slowly seen the Pell Grant, which is the federal grant, increase maybe $100 every year, but tuition has gone up considerably more. And besides that, even, you know, room and board, transportation, all of that has gone up so much more, you know, than back when I was in school. You know, it just didn't even seem like that much of an issue when I was in school. I'm like, well, you know, what are people talking about? But it's like, it is so different now than what it was before. So I just think it's really tough. You know, students do want to get an education, but it comes at a price.
Josh, I wonder if scholarships that are available, I mean, that's kind of your area of expertise here, that if those have kept up with the cost of education.
That's a great question. I would say I'm somewhat new to the game, so I don't have 20 years of experience in this field. I have 2 years of experience, and what I can say is that I've seen the total increase of external scholarships brought in. That's been increasing by 300 to 500,000 each year. So students are bringing in more external private scholarships every single year. And I'm not sure if that's just the growth of the economy that's creating more scholarships for students, or if some of my work is rubbing off on students and they're actually bringing in more scholarships that may have gone to other students elsewhere. So that's hard for me to say. Sorry.
Yeah, but I wonder maybe where these private scholarships are coming from. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it a case where we're seeing more employers offering scholarships, or are companies, organizations that are offering scholarships to students?
Yeah, there are scholarships everywhere. So you are right. There are corporations and nonprofits and communities and churches. You can find scholarships really everywhere and for anything under the sun. So what I see a lot of websites that are trying to drive traffic to their website, they're offering scholarships. So I'll look at the scholarship, see if it's legitimate, see if the website is something that is actually a website that would provide information, would provide a scholarship eventually. But what I'm seeing is a real rise in website scholarships. So it's hard to say if 100% of them are legitimate, but I would say it's probably moving further away from the main big corporations providing scholarships and going to all these smaller businesses that are trying to drive traffic, drive views to their website, providing scholarships.
Kevin, I wonder if you've seen more businesses, more organizations paying attention to this issue of, you know, the rising cost of education, and even paying attention to, potential new employees coming in with more debt.
Yeah, as an employer, we have definitely seen that as an issue as well. I think what it does is it adds stress to employees that, especially for us, we have a very young workforce. So half of our employees are under the age of 35 or so. And so they're just getting started in their careers, and they have getting started in their families and making some of these larger asset purchases that we're talking about. So there are a lot of different things going on. And so you introduce financial stress on top of that, that stuff just comes to work as well. And so, you know, we've talked about different benefits and being able to provide them. So mental health benefits, for example, someone to talk to, someone to help them out of some of the challenges that they're facing. We mentioned the financial literacy efforts that we have. We certainly have financial counselors available on staff that can help our employees kind of dig out some of the challenges that they've got. I think some of the ripple effects, though, that the student loan debt has are a couple of things that come to mind. So short-term emergencies become that much more elevated when, you know, you're struggling to make ends meet. And so all of a sudden you have an unexpected surprise and you have a difficult time coming up with $400 or $500 to fix this or repair that or whatever. That creates issues. And I would say that we also have employees that, again, if you need all of your income to pay your current bills, you contribute less to 401ks, which kind of kicks the problem down the road, right? So you're not contributing for your retirement like you should be. Maybe that helps you get by today, but tomorrow down the road, that's going to have some unintended consequences too, unfortunately.
Kevin Strangman, Executive Vice President of Administration for Ultra Federal Credit Union, is here with us today to talk about rising levels of student debt and how it's impacting graduates, families, and more in the La Crosse area. He's joined by Josh Bonnell, Scholarship Coordinator for the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, and Geraldine Grandel, Financial Aid Manager for Western Technical College. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on student debt and talk about how the state can help address the issue. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. Thank you. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today, we're talking about the local impact of student debt. A federal report from 2017 found Wisconsinites have more than $24 billion in student debt. Governor Tony Evers has proposed improving refinancing options for borrowers in the state. Joining us to talk about this idea and other ways to address student debt are Gerilyn Grandel, financial aid manager for Western Technical College, Josh Bunnell, scholarship coordinator for the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, and Kevin Strangman, executive vice president of administration for Ultra Federal Credit Union. As I mentioned, there has been some talk about just the rising level of student debt that Wisconsin residents are carrying, and the state treasurer recently visited La Crosse for a discussion on student debt in kind of light of this idea of improving refinancing options. Gerilyn, I wonder what your thoughts are on the ways maybe improving refinancing options could help students and maybe other ways the state could help address this issue.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. that's why I think the task force is making its way around the state to try to get ideas and try to hear the stories like what we're sharing here today and like what we shared at Ultra Federal Credit Union a month ago or so. I haven't really given it a ton of thought. Like I said earlier, I think when students have the direct loans, the federal government does try to work with students to help them to change their payment every month so that they can try to have an affordable amount to fit in with their budget. It's when students have the private loans where they kind of can get into some problems because those are loans where the interest rate is fluctuating. They don't have the benefits like that you do when you have the direct loans. So I think if there would be any sort of a refinancing at all, I think the private loan is probably the place to start because, like I said, the other loans through the federal government do have some options.
Kevin, I wonder if you could maybe explain for people who aren't super familiar with this kind of what the differences are between like taking a federal loan or a loan through the federal government and a loan through a private bank or credit union.
Sure. It really is almost as simple as you kind of described it. So there's a federal loan program that is available for all students, and it's based on need to some extent, whether the interest is subsidized or paid for while you're in college or unsubsidized where it's not. So that's available to a certain amount. But where you run into the challenge with the rising cost of education is oftentimes the federal program isn't enough to cover the cost when you figure in tuition and room and board. So one of the ways you can make up that gap is a private student loan. So that is going to another financial, a bank or credit union, other places where they have loan programs specifically targeted towards that. The big difference is the private student loans are funded entirely by the institution that's granting the loan. So they don't have the government guarantee in the event of default. And part of the challenge with all of the student loan debt is default rates continue to rise. And so that is a riskier type of loan for institutions to make. Thereby, you don't have the, forgiveness, you don't have the subsidized interest payments, and you have typically a higher interest rate to be able to cover the additional risk.
What are your thoughts, Kevin, on the idea of providing other refinancing options in the state as been discussed by the state treasurer and Governor Tony Evers?
Yeah, as Gerilyn alluded to, it's a difficult situation, no doubt about it. I think one of the things we just have to be real careful of is refinancing debt that is federally guaranteed today into some sort of private program where they lose the forgiveness option that we were talking about earlier today. So, while that could help in the short term, long term, that may not be the best solution. One of the things that I think might be interesting, we fight this brain drain challenge also in the state of Wisconsin, certainly locally here as well. And what I mean by that is just graduates that come to school here and then they leave, they go elsewhere. I'd love to see the state come up with some sort of program that perhaps is tied to forgiveness for those students that are from here or graduate from here. If they stay here, they live here, they work here, they contribute to the economy, that perhaps there's some sort of forgiveness or favorable rates that and terms that would be available to them to try and keep those kids here and contributing to our economy too.
Yeah, and you know, along those same lines, we've also heard of more employers offering loan forgiveness as a way to attract people to jobs. And I just wonder if you feel like that's going to be something we continue to see.
Yeah, I do. I think that is one of those benefits that's going to be coming probably in the not too distant future. One of the challenges that we have today is that the forgiveness, the student loan forgiveness, if that's a benefit, is taxable income. And so it's not as advantageous for the employee as it may sound on the surface. There's some movements in the tax regulations to be able to take that away. And if that changes, I do think you'll see a lot more employers that offer that as a benefit. I think you have to be careful with that as a solution, though, because I'm envisioning that many employers that would offer that program, benefits are a package deal, right? And so if you offer that benefit, you're going to have to take away options elsewhere. A lot of employers that have done that, so they give you an option to say, I can give you student loan forgiveness, but your 401k match isn't going to be as rich, or we're not going to contribute as much there. So it kind of creates this issue that I alluded to earlier, where it may help today, but it doesn't help you to save for retirement down the road, and it just kind of kicks the problem down the road.
Geraldine, I kind of see you shaking your head in agreement. I wonder if this is also something that maybe isn't as easy as it sounds, or as perfect a solution as it sounds.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I was thinking the same thing. I thought, you know, if employers start to offer that benefit to employees, then they, because like you said, it's a package. You're not going to be able to give somebody who has student loan debt that additional benefit, but then others who maybe don't have student loan debt don't get something additional. I mean, it's something's got to give, so... Yeah, I agree completely.
Josh, I wonder what your thoughts are on all this and what you see as maybe responses that the state or even federal government, you know, should be making to this issue that's affecting a lot of residents.
I think that's a really great question. The refinance program is something I probably wouldn't utilize just because all of my loans and all my wife's loans are all through the federal government through the standard student loans. So looking at that, I do have this safety net of contacting my loan provider and navigating, okay, what if I did lose my job and how can I navigate paying back my loan through that? And they have grace periods and different payment plans that I can go through, and they have the forgiveness track. I think the refinance program will be most beneficial, like Kevin was saying, for students who are graduating with private loans, and that's definitely the area where I'm not too sure how many students have private loans, but I would say that would be the biggest impact. I also like what Kevin said, the brain drain of if there was a way to include in the refinance program some kind of loan forgiveness for Wisconsin students who decided to stay in Wisconsin. Right out of my undergrad, I moved to Texas, Southern Texas, and so I was definitely contributing to that brain drain. Luckily, I moved back to help Wisconsin back out. But I do think there needs to be discussion on what are the benefits of a federal program, how can our state be similar or somewhat comparable to that federal program. I guess the real question is, why are we doing it? Is it to help students? What students are we trying to help? Are they the private loan students, or are they all loan students? And I think if you look at that and kind of decipher, okay, I want to help all students, okay, how can we do that? I think those are the questions they have to ask.
I wonder if this issue is complicated because each student has their own unique financial situation, mm-hmm. and their own unique mix of maybe where they're getting financial help.
I would say, yeah, that definitely has some factor in it. With my experience with talking to students about their finances, it was a wide array of different financial backgrounds, and some students had some kind of financial literacy. Maybe their parents taught it. Maybe it was taught in their high school, and others had no clue, and that could be a graduating college senior going into the real world. Learning how to be an adult, and they have no clue how to manage their finances. So there's a wide spectrum, and students who are educated earlier, I feel like, have a better run of things once they're graduating from college. So, yeah.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. We're talking about the local impact of increased student debt. We're here with Josh Bonnell from UW-La Crosse, Kevin Strangman from Ultra Federal Credit Union, and Gerilyn Grandall from Western Technical College. Kevin, I want to return to an issue you brought up earlier of not only looking at debt from student loans, but also from credit cards and how that, a lot of times that's impacting young people or students. And I just wonder if you could speak more about how this issue is maybe complicated by other kinds of debt.
Absolutely. I think, you know, back even to my days when I was in college, you know, most of the mail that I got at that point was this credit card offer or that credit card offer. And I think that that has only ramped up over the years. My kids get mail even though they're away at school. My oldest son is not even living with us. And it's still, you know, weekly we get offers for different things. And it is really easy to sign up and take the freebie or sign up and take the free money or, you know, however it is viewed. And the impact of that is really where it comes back to the whole financial literacy thing. You know, there is no such thing as free money. And at some point you've got to pay that back. And what do those repayment terms look like is really at the heart of teaching the kids financial literacy. And it's kids and young adults and it's adults as well. You know, we talked a little bit about, you know, different resources for different kids and going to school. I would say that we also tend to see more parents that are strapped financially today than we probably ever have. And so while they have good income earning capacity, they also have expenses that match that. And so parents as a source of helping the kids to pay for college is not as strong as it once was. Gerilyn talked about that parents going back to school, which I think you certainly see a lot of that. But there are also a lot of parents that just financially don't have the means to help their kids go to school, perhaps like what it once was.
What factors do you think are contributing to more parents having their own debt or their own kind of financial situation to deal with?
Yeah, I think there's probably no one-size-fits-all there either. I think some of it does. I hate to keep coming back to financial literacy, but there are a lot of adults that aren't very good at handling their finances as well. And so don't have budgets or simply don't know how to make a budget, don't know how to live within a budget, and find themselves getting into challenges. In addition, there are all kinds of reasons why people get into financial challenges that are no fault of their own. So death or divorce or loss of job, some of those things as well, certainly all contribute to that as well.
Yeah, I just think it's surprising given that, you know, by a lot of measures, our economy is doing well. You know, we see unemployment rate down. We see, you know, high demand for people and jobs. And, you know, I just wonder how those two things kind of coexist.
Yeah. Yes, very valid points, I would say, for sure. You know, in a lot of cases, it depends what your job is. A lot of pay increases have not kept up with inflation, even though it's a relatively low inflation environment right now. Parents are just spending. I guess I don't know how else to say it. And you know, the repayment period is a challenge. We have a foundation. It's called the Ultra Foundation, and the focus is entirely on financial literacy for members of the community, so across all age spectrums and things. And so some of the statistics that we will throw out and that we read are, you know, half of adults have less than $10,000 saved up for retirement. So you can read into that all the different reasons why, but that's where we get concerned about what does retirement look like, or what is the burden on the rest of the population to support people once they get to retirement if they don't have any dollars there to help support themselves.
And talking a lot about financial literacy, Gerilyn, I wonder how you think we navigate, you know, just creating many more hoops to jump through for students to get the financial help that they need, you know, and still making sure that they are educated. You know, how do we, you know, is there a risk that increased literacy requirements, you know, can go too far?
Yeah, we've talked about that in our office quite a few times because, you know, we talked about entrance loan counseling, and obviously that's a form of financial literacy, and they do it once at the very beginning. And I've heard, you know, speak of possibly requiring students to do that every single year. And I don't think that's a bad idea, but I can tell you for a fact that we have a lot of parents that are doing that that entrance counseling for the student. You know, oh, there's the requirement, I'll just do that for you, son or daughter, and the son or daughter never even goes through it. So not only did they not go through it once, I don't know that they go through it those other years either. I mean, you know, some of them sure do. But, you know, I've taken that entrance counseling myself just to see once, because a lot of students are like, it's not easy to navigate, and it's not. They've got to make that site, you know, a lot more user-friendly. And again, that's just one form of financial literacy. But I think I really do think that every college should require that there is a financial literacy program of some kind. But like Kevin said earlier, you know, it needs to start as early as middle school. I think it needs to start even earlier. I mean, if it's like every single year you've kind of instilled this in this child, you know, that, you know, taking money matters seriously is going to be important for you as you continue to move forward. You know, maybe by the time they get to college, you know, it'll have sunk in and they get it. You know, they'll be a little bit probably better with their money.
I wonder, though, is that going to take, obviously, a community buy-in on this issue, right? More people than just the post-secondary education to kind of help move the needle on this issue.
Yeah, that's very possible. You know, so many things come down from the federal government. So many, obviously, guidelines that we have to follow in the financial aid office does come from there. It makes it rather difficult because we are living this every single day. We see the things that students are going through, yet we're taking the guidance from, you know, the federal government. You know, I think that sometimes, you know, they think they know exactly what's needed. But I think, you know, as far as financial aid offices, we'd have, you know, some really good ideas as well because we can see what's happening every day.
Do you feel like this issue is being talked about enough at the federal government level? You know, do we hear our lawmakers, you know, talking on this issue enough?
I think there's a lot of talk on it. I don't know. You know, you see, you know, one president wants us to do one thing and we do it, and then we have a new president, and then that gets wiped away. A federal regulation that we were required to do, and all of a sudden that's gone. I think they all think they have the next best idea, and we're kind of always struggling to just, you know, make sure that we're meeting those federal requirements. I think they're trying to do something and move the needle in the right direction, but I think just like the state task force is probably going to find out, it's a difficult subject.
Josh, I wonder if you feel like lawmakers are talking enough about this issue, either at the federal level or at the state level.
I guess I'm not too sure. I mean, I would have to really keep a close eye and ear on all of the different outlets discussing this topic. And are they talking about financial literacy? Are they talking about student loan debt? It's hard for me to say, but I think just touching back on your questions about society or a community, I think looking at it, it needs to be a societal change. If we look at our percentage of families living paycheck to paycheck, that's right around 78% of families that are living paycheck to paycheck, and that doesn't discriminate against your income. You can have $25,000 or making $250,000. You could still be living paycheck to paycheck. You also have to look at the average families carrying around $16,000 in credit card debt, which is a considerable amount. And why are we spending all of this money? And I think it is the society we're encouraged to spend more and more and more. I think one thing that really brings to my mind is cell phones. How many times do you buy a new cell phone? Every 2 years. So I think in order to help reduce debt in a whole, or to get to your question of, yeah, I think it needs to be a societal change, and I think communities need to have conversations on how to, I guess, better manage money.
As we wrap up here, Kevin, I wonder how you feel like La Crosse does when it comes to this conversation about, you know, talking more about money issues and, you know, smart spending.
I guess my I don't have any evidence to support my opinion one way or another. I think anecdotally, we probably do better than most. I think, you know, the upper Midwest tends to be more conservative than other parts of the country when it comes to financial matters and spending. I think it's a more affordable place to live in general than other parts of the country. So somewhat by, you know, by proximity and by nature, we probably do better than others. But we're all dealing with a lot of the issues locally here, and so there still is plenty of need and, you know, plenty of opportunity to help.
Kevin Strangman, Executive Vice President of Administration for Ultra Federal Credit Union, Josh Bunnell, Scholarship Coordinator for UW-La Crosse, and Geraldine Grandel, Financial Aid Manager for Western Technical College, join us today to talk about how student debt is impacting graduates and communities in the Cooley region. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.